Thinking about care for an elderly loved one is never easy, but getting the right advice and support can be. Bupa's Elderly Care Support Line is here to answer any questions you might have. From paying for care to finding care homes in your local area, our advice is free and available to everyone. You don't even have to be a Bupa customer. So call Bupa's Elderly Care Support Line today on 0800 52 00052 or search Bupa Elderly Care online.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Let's Talk Tribe. This is episode 10. It's Thursday night. The Indians are about half an hour removed from getting swept by the Braves, which puts them at 71-62. They are four games behind Oakland for that second wild card spot, four and a half behind Tampa Bay, also behind Baltimore with the Yankees only a game back. So obviously the series couldn't really have gone any worse, with the big culprit being the lineup, which continues to have a lot of trouble scoring runs, a total of three runs in three games against Nevada. The pitchers gave up only eight. You give up eight runs in three games and lose all of them. That's pretty tough. And I looked, since August started, 26 games they've played. The pitching's been great. They've allowed three or fewer runs 15 times, but they've scored three or fewer 16 times. So, you know, the lineup, which was the strength of the team for most of the season, really failing them now. Got a big weekend series with Detroit, and my guest this week to look back through the wreckage of the Braves series and ahead to the weekend and try to figure out what the Tribe's chances are is Ryan Richards, who is the editor and lead writer with us at Let's Talk or at Let's Go Tribe. And welcome back to the show, Ryan.
So thanks for having me again, Jason.
So you're tasked with the sitting through games like tonight and then having to stay up late to write a recap. What is there to say? I mean, you know, this is sort of three games in a row, pretty similar. How are you feeling at the end of the series?
Well, you feel the same after every, you know, each of the three games. It's the same culprit. The pitching has been great. On Monday night with Salazar, or Tuesday night with Salazar in the bullpen. Last night was right. Masterson in the bullpen. Tonight was Jimenez and Cody Allen. And two runs, three runs, and you lose all of them. So it has to be the offense. And how you feel about it, it's kind of – when you don't score, I think, is the worst kind of game to watch. When the team isn't scoring on offense, at least when they're scoring, you feel like they have a chance of coming back.
Yeah.
But of late, at least past the All-Star break, it's just been. I mean, if they give up that three-run homer that Jimenez gave up, after they gave up that home run, I thought they lost. That's how bad it's gotten.
Yeah, I mean, a team like Atlanta, who's got Craig Kimbrel, maybe the best closer in baseball. I mean, the game was over when they were still behind going into the ninth. I've got no confidence and really in anyone at the plate right now. I mean, I guess there's some guys I'm more frustrated with than others, but there's no one I'm excited to see at the plate right now. I just feel like the whole team is floundering.
Yeah. And I was looking at the stats and that pairs you out. Looking at the August stats, I mean, it's ugly. There's one, actually, the one, you know, probably the top guy is Carlos Santana. His OPS is 765. He's the leader of the team for August. So that's 224, 353, 412, which is, not very good, but he's the best of the team. And some of the other guys, Jason Kipnis, has a 686 OPS. Ezdrubal Cabrera, obviously we've talked a lot about him, 602
right.
OPS. Michael Brantley, 582 OPS. Michael Bourne, 550 OPS. Lonnie Chisenhall, do I even want to say his number?
No,
his
OPS? It's unbelievable. No one is hitting. And, Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I as a team, I looked up on Fangraphs, and in August, the lineups weighted runs created plus, which is kind of the Fangraphs equivalent to OPS plus, if you're a listener who knows OPS plus. And, you know, the idea is to take the player's hitting and adjust it for the parks he plays in and the league and all of that stuff. And 100 is league average, and below 100 is worse. And the Indians are at 83, which is worse than the American League. Worse than the Astros and the White Sox, the Mariners, you know, teams that you think of as being poor offensive teams, and the Indians are outdoing them all. And it's been frustrating because on the flip side, the pitching's been so good. You know, I mean, this is what we couldn't get all last year and a lot of this year. And the pitching's been, because the same thing in August, fielding independent pitching, 3.23, best in the American League, nine plus strikeouts a game, best in the American League. I mean, the pitching's been at its best, and they're losing so many of these 3-1, 3-2, 2-0 type games. It's, in a way, it's more frustrating than losing like 11-4, where you get your butt kicked. But so be it. I don't know. It was a rough series for me.
Well, I mean, it's a two-sided coin, because number one, you get extremely frustrated when you waste all those pitching performances like they had of late. But at the same time, you think, these guys can't stink at the plate. They're too good for this long. And once they get going, they can play with anybody. But it's just putting that together. And unfortunately, that they're running out of time, and they're, you know, obviously this is a very important 9-game stretch, and they might have their most important series to date, you know, in Detroit this weekend. And if they get swept, they might be done.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of Indians fans, you know, there's, you know, oh, should we be, the Tigers are playing the A's, and who should we cheer for? Because we want the Tigers to lose so we can win the division. And I've been in the camp for a couple of weeks now. I think, you know, since the last Detroit series, where the division's off my radar, the wild card's the thing, and in Oakland was, I think, like a game and a half, I think maybe two games ahead of the Indians going into the week. And so I was hoping to see the Tigers win and sort of expecting them to take at least two, if not three, of the four, and instead they lost three. And yeah, I mean, four games is a big deficit at this point. I mean, if they get swept this weekend, I think it's over. I think.
Well, yeah, and I'm not saying that they get swept because they'd be challenging the Tigers. I'm just saying they can't get swept because that would take them completely out of the wild card spot.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Unless they get completely lucky and Orioles and the A's all of a sudden get cold and a lot of very lucky things happen.
You know, you mentioned the Orioles, and the Yankees are only, oh my God, if the Yankees make the playoffs after all of this, but they're only one game behind the Indians. So
with Mark Reynolds at second base.
Even if Oakland starts losing, if the Indians aren't winning, it just means Baltimore and New York and, you know, other teams are going to be the ones catching the A's. They've got to start winning games. And they've been, I mean, do you remember offhand what the record is against the Tigers this year? 3-12 or something like that?
Oh, it's awful. I think they actually won two out of the first three games, and they haven't run maybe a couple games since. I don't remember. It's bad.
Yeah, it's been brutal. And, Miguel Cabrera, go ahead.
I guess the only saving grace is that if they can somehow go 3-3 over the next six games, and they can get into September and get some reinforcements, and maybe they make a trade for somebody. I'm probably doubtful at this point with all the waiver claims kind of come and gone.
Right.
They still have an opportunity with their schedule to get back into it. So
yeah,
you can't,
no,
I mean, so you can't,
I mean,
completely
like,
just.
Yeah, if they're within three games after this stretch, if they've got Detroit and then they come home and play Baltimore next week for three games, and, you know, after that, some games against the Royals are, you know, I guess are about as good as the Indians, but certainly not, you know, a very good team. But the Royals are their toughest opponent after that Baltimore series. So, I mean, I feel like if they're within three games a week from now, they've got a shot, but they're four back now, so they're going to have to find a way to win you know, half of these next six or something like that.
And the good news is that the 14 AL East teams that are still in it play each other a whole bunch the last month. So there are opportunities, but the big thing is, you know, they can't let Oakland run away from them.
Yeah. And again, you know, you thought maybe the Tigers would knock them down a couple of games, and if the Indians won even one of this series, that maybe they'd only be a game back, but that's not how it played out. And I saw Miguel Cabrera left today's game, which the Tigers were losing again. And then because Max Scherzer just knows how to not lose, they came back in the ninth inning. I think it was Torrey Hunter hit a walk-off home run for them. Anyway, they won, but Cabrera left the game. And I'm in Chicago and was at a White Sox-Tigers game a couple weeks ago, and Cabrera was still hitting the bejesus out of the ball, but he looked horrible moving around. And so I'm not surprised he's been struggling, but he's apparently already said he expects he'll be in the lineup tomorrow. So it doesn't look like
he'll probably hit two home runs.
Yeah. I mean, I can't even remember offhand how far back we are of Detroit at the moment. It's not all that far. I suppose if we swept them, hey, the division's still in play, but it's just so hard to imagine the Indians sweeping anyone, right? They're 6.5 back. Even if they swept, it'd be 3.5 with 4 weeks.
3.5 and making up 3.5 because they both have about the same type of schedule.
Right.
Even if they sweep them, if they sweep them, it'll be better for them for the wild card than for the division.
Exactly, but it's still about the wild card. All right, so the lineup, as we said, been a, you know, almost across the board mess. The pitching, as we said, has been really good. But there are some kind of question marks or unknowns with the rotation. Salazar, who hasn't looked as sharp, I haven't seen anything definitive, but there's a sense that he's going to reach an innings limit pretty soon. You know, Kazmir was better in his last start, but he's way beyond the number of innings he's thrown in any recent year. But then on the flip side, Corey Kluber, hopefully back. Josh Tomlin, maybe ready to make his first appearance for a while. What do you see from the rotation, or what do you hope to see? I mean, starting rotation, go.
Well, obviously they can't pitch any better than, you know, than they have to this point, at least recently since the Detroit series. Obviously, Matheson's actually been one of the weakest links, actually, of this rotation because he's kind of struggled to get through games, as odd as that sounds. Obviously, Jimenez has been just incredible compared to kind of what we thought of him. At the beginning of the year, he's turned into kind of, no, not the guy the Indians traded for, but kind of 75% of the guy, which is still pretty good. And, you have a kind of a rejuvenated Zach McAllister. Whatever you get from Kazmir and Salazar probably right now is a bonus. And then you're going to try to mix and match Josh Tomlin and Corey Kluber. You know, who knows who you'll bring up? Maybe some Carrasco spot starts. Maybe Trevor Bauer makes it. So there's enough pitching that if they can mix and match and, you know, just the right way, that they can get through this month and be pretty good. But it's, you know, can the hitting get going again?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to believe so many guys slumping at the same time. It feels like they've got to snap out of it. It's just a matter of, do they snap out of it in time for it to make a difference?
If this was July and they were doing this, like, well, there's plenty of time for them to get going again. But, you know, here we are at the end of August, and, you know, if you have a bad week from now on, if you have a bad week, it might be over. So,
yep. Yeah, I mean, at this point, like we said, a bad weekend and it could be over.
Yeah,
I mean, Jimenez, you know, he gave up the home run tonight. And, you know, if that one at-bat goes differently, and, you know, not to give him credit, you know, I mean, he gave up the home run, he gave up the runs. But, you know, 10 strikeouts for the second game in a row, which I saw Jordan Bastian, who, if you're listening and don't know, he's the Indians beat writer for MLB.com. He tweeted after the game that Jimenez was the first Indians pitcher with back-to-back 10 strikeout games since Sabathia just before he got traded in 2008. So, I mean, that's been a while. And Evaldo probably, you know, a month or two ago, not the guy who would guess just because he was barely getting 10 guys out in some games.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's hard to really look back on it during the middle of the season, but I think once the end of the season hits, we'll look back on this season and say Mickey Callaway is amazing because of what.
Yeah. No, I mean you.
I mean, yeah, and it's not like they got a bunch of different guys. They most of the guys that have had success were here last year and had one of the worst pitching staffs in Indians history.
Right.
And Jimenez is obviously the poster child for the turnaround.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of fans have been slow to realize that. A lot of the bad mouthing of him has sort of died down, but it took a while for people to notice. And, you know, there's still, he doesn't go as deep into games as he'd like, but, you know, he's been really good definitely since the All-Star break and really since he just had a horrible April. I'll be interested. I a month into the season, I thought there was no way the Indians would possibly exercise the option they have on him for next year. But now if they believe he's the pitcher he's been for a couple months now, I think they will exercise that option.
Well, they will exercise it, but unfortunately now it's a mutual option. So, Jimenez has to do it, and I mean, if he'd be kind of stupid to exercise it because he'd go on the market. I mean, I guarantee you he'll get at least somebody. We'll offer him a three-year deal.
No, yeah, you're right. I totally forgot about that because I was so caught up in, well, certainly he'll exercise it, but the Indians shouldn't, and totally forgot that it's mutual. Yeah, you're right. He won't. That's bizarre to think, but yeah, he absolutely won't want to do it at this point. Speaking of pitchers and leaving the Indians, Brett Myers released today after pretty stellar contributions to the team this year. I was kind of surprised after the news came out. There were some pretty there were tweets from people and words and articles from people that were kind of harsh. There was one I put in my post of it at Let's Go Tribe from Dennis Maniloff, who's one of the beat writers for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and it said, "I'm not going to go so far as to state that Myers' teammates couldn't stand him, but they sure as heck won't miss him." And it's pretty rare you get someone whose job it is to talk to players who comes out that harshly and kind of implicates other players in it.
And the weird thing is, I mean, he hasn't really pitched since, I don't know, April or something like that.
Yeah, April, I think 19th.
So it's not like he's been in the clubhouse a whole bunch. I guess he's obviously been rehabbing and in and out. But, man, basically a month of spring training and 1 month of the season, and then everyone kind of hates him.
His personal life from, you know, a few years ago now, he's not someone I thought very high of coming in. But, you know, one of those classic sports things, if he'd been pitching lights out, I probably would have gotten amnesia about it during the season.
Sure.
But he did not pitch well. He pitched 21 innings, so not a lot. But for anyone who's ever pitched even just 21 innings, his fielding independent pitching of 8.71 is the worst in Indians history, and he gave up 10 home runs in those 21 innings. This is the worst home run ratio of any pitcher on any team in any season in history for, you know, a guy with even just 21 innings.
Yeah, and just to give some context to that, Ubaldo Jimenez, who, you know, going into the season we thought he was going to stink, he's pitched 134 innings coming in today, and, you know, add seven to that, and he's given up 16 home runs the entire season. Justin Maston has 188 innings. He's given up 13 home runs.
Right. Yeah, so good work by Brett. Thanks for your service to the team.
Well, actually, his service was kind of getting hurt and giving Corey Kluber a chance. So,
yeah,
if you look on the bright side of things.
We're paying Kluber $7 million this year instead. So let's look at who all did the Indians bring in. Obviously, Swisher and Bourne were the big two. And then Myers, Rayburn. Is there anyone else who was signed last offseason that I'm forgetting? That's actually
Kazmir, obviously. Kazmir.
Kazmir.
Giambi.
I feel like, I don't know, you know, Swisher and Bourne, I think, have been disappointing. They haven't been terrible. But they haven't been what they were in previous seasons. And for as much money as they're owed, that's been frustrating. Rayburn and Kazmir, on the other hand, both, I think, much more than anyone reasonably could have expected. I don't know. I guess it's a mixed bag for the new acquisitions. Jan Gomes, who they traded for, has been tremendous. And I think should be playing more. Earlier in the season, I was saying, no, you know, Santana's value is partially tied up in the play, but I've changed my mind on that. I would like to see Gomes playing more. How about you? Do you have any lineup adjustments you'd like to see?
As far as going down the stretch, if they don't, Gomes has to be playing regularly. I'm not saying he has to play every day because he has to take, you know, he's a catcher.
Sure.
Going to take some days off, but between Santana, I think the first thing they'll do on September 1st is bring up that third catcher so that they can play Santana at DH, because Giambi, his home runs aside, has been pretty awful in the second half of the year. And, you know, it makes too much sense to put Santana at DH. Gomes at catcher, that's obviously your better defensive arrangement, and you allow Santana not to have to catch and, you know, hit it clean up and be the big run producer, and you'd have that third catcher in the on the bench just in case something happens. And obviously the rest of the lineup, I don't know what else you can do. Once Rayburn comes back, assuming he'll come back fairly soon, he should be playing right field, obviously. But unfortunately, he's had a couple leg injuries, and that gives you pause about whether he can actually play the outfield.
Right. Yeah, and
unfortunately, the position player depth in the minors is not very good in the high minors. So there's no outfielder. I mean, the Indians brought up Matt Carson. He's kind of like a placeholder, I guess. Basically, a body that can play outfield, but I think he'll be gone September 1st as they add somebody to the roster. But there isn't much, you know. That's why, you know, I was kind of disappointed that the Indians didn't jump on a guy like David DeJesus when he was available again, because the Rays got him. And obviously the Indians had a worse record than the Rays, so they certainly could have acquired him, and he certainly, you know, could have helped down the stretch.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just the offense is floundering. You just want to feel like you'd rather see them fail with a different lineup than the same one night after night. But you're right. I think at this point, I mean, Saturday is the last day. Even if they could work something out, I don't think you can. I guess you can add guys in September that just can't be on a playoff roster.
Yeah, they just can't be on your postseason roster.
Right.
You can obviously, if you're fighting for a playoff spot, you can acquire a player, and they can help you get to the postseason. But once you get to the postseason, he can't be on your roster.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Like we've already said tonight, you know, if you have to think at some point, the bats come back, and you know, Rayburn hopefully back, and in a couple of days they can bring up another catcher, and at that point maybe you can play Santana at first, put Swisher in right, and get Rayburn at DH a little bit. I don't know. You know what I mean? They can mix and match, I guess.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I guess what we're saying, we're both saying, is that the guys that are currently on the roster, they're the ones that have to, you know, have to step up. There isn't a whole lot the Indians can bring up from the minors that will help the offense. A guy like David Cooper is kind of like a shot in the dark. Who knows what he'll if they bring him up, who knows what he'll be able to do. He hasn't played most of the year. He had a couple vertebrae, major back surgeries, put it that way, earlier in the year. So who knows what he's capable of. And, you know, so the guys, Kipnis, Cabrera, Brantley, Bourne, Chisenhall, they're the ones that have to hit. If they don't hit, it doesn't matter who the Indians bring up.
Yep, that's true. I think playing Gomes more is the one adjustment that they could make that I think could make a difference. And you're right, the rest of it is just either the guys on the team start hitting like they were earlier in the year, or they don't. And, yeah, we'll see what comes of it. Playing the Braves, I think for me and probably a lot of Indians fan, my mind wanders back to the 95 team since that was the World Series matchup that year. So that team's lineup was maybe the best in Indians history. The lineup has been terrible for the last month. So if you could take one 1995 Indian and put him on the roster for the rest of the season, who do you go with?
It's easy, Albert Bell.
Yeah, that is easy.
From that team, another one of pet peeves, he should have won the 95 MVP. The Mo Vaughn winning the 1995 MVP is the most ludicrous award, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect example of...
Maybe I'm biased, but Mo Vaughn over Albert Bell still is the most ludicrous MVP award I think I've seen. As long as I follow baseball.
And it's not, I mean, sometimes you look back at awards and we have statistics we didn't have back then. You know, you use something like WAR or even just like OPS Plus that accounts for, oh, gosh, Fenway was kind of an easy park to hit in. Maybe Jim Rice wasn't quite that good. But you don't need stats like that. I mean, he had, just looking at the numbers that baseball writers have always loved, Bell should have crushed Vaughn. I think Edgar Martinez is the guy you could make some sort of case for instead of Bell.
If Edgar Martinez would have won the award, I don't think I would have really.
But yeah,
I probably would have been upset, but Mo Vaughn, oh my goodness.
All right, you're right. Albert Bell was too. Okay, let's say Albert Bell, he's busy. Who's next?
On that team?
Go Tomei. I was thinking maybe Tomei, who hadn't totally come into his own, but third base has been pretty rough this year.
Yeah, you're right. If you're looking at marginal upgrades, but huge upgrades, Tomei at third base, yes. I think obviously Manny wasn't right, so he would obviously be an upgrade over Drew Stubbs.
Right.
But Brian Raber has been okay. If we're talking about lineups, obviously you had Murray. I think Murray was most of the time at DH, I think.
Yep.
Paul Sereno at first base. And Paul Sereno actually would have, I'm pretty sure without looking it up, out hit Nick Swisher, even if he adjusted it to this era. So even the Sorrento, who is, I think, most of the time hitting eighth, is, you know, would have hit better than, or it did hit better than Nick Swisher this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Kipnis gets the advantage over Baerga. Santana gets the edge over, I think it was kind of a platoon between Tony Pena and Sandy Alomar at that point.
Yeah, because Sandy was hurt, I think, a lot of that year.
Right, but you know what? I just brought it up. Tomei, his OPS was 996, so I guess he was pretty well into his own. So
yeah, that's pretty good.
He saw an upgrade over Chisenhall. It's sort of bittersweet. I mean, at this point, I've pulled up the 95 team stats, and gosh, they could hit.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done this to myself. I'm gonna go to bed sad now tonight, missing all of those guys.
Yeah, and you had obviously you had Bell had the ridiculous year, and Manny Ramirez as a 23-year-old, basically, I think a year younger than Chisenhall, is now, you know, hitting 31 home runs, 960 OPS.
Yeah.
Tommy was Chisenhall's age, right? So to think about that.
Right.
At a 996 OPS, you know, Carlos Baerga was only 26. I think, isn't Kipnis 26 this year?
I think you're right.
Yeah, wow.
Good team, a young team. And they can pitch, too. Everyone, you know, their offense was so good. Everyone talks about that, but Dennis Martinez was great that year. They had a good rotation. Earl Hershiser.
Yeah. The bullpen was incredible.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah. If you look at a bullpen, Julian Tavares had probably him and Betancourt probably had the two greatest relief seasons of kind of the reliever era, Indians era. He was just incredible. Obviously, Plunk and Poole and Aussemacher were the lefty righty guys that Hargrove used. Of course, you know, Jose Mesa. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah,
everyone,
this was
the
Jose
Mesa. I think of 97 first. I think of Game 7, and we lost. But, yeah, I mean, 95, his ERA was 1.13. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and he...
But, yeah, the 2013 team, no 95 team, but not bad. And, you know, they're as awful as this week has been. Got a month left. They can... just find a way to win three of these next six. We'll see what happens.
Well, but yeah, I guess I'll kind of get towards a better mindset of things. Just think about this team last year.
Yeah.
You know, here they were just losing, you know, I think they only won four or five games in August. Here we are at the end of August. We're complaining about, I don't know what the Indians are in August, maybe around 500 now. And
yeah,
they're 98-9 games above 500, and you can see, and more importantly, you can see how they can be competitive for the near future because of the pitching that they've has kind of stepped up this year.
Right. Last question on that note, you know, talking about going forward, this year's not over. We're not writing it off, but looking at the future, I was talking to the last couple of weeks, my guest. And, you know, there's always a talk that in Detroit, Illich, the owner there, he's advanced in years and might not have a long time left and desperately wants to win a World Series. And the Tigers, have spent a ton of money. And so hypothetically, let's say the Tigers win the World Series this year. He gets the trophy, gets the ring. Does he then decide, well, I don't need to spend anymore and slash payroll? Or does he think
no chance?
Won the World Series?
look what he's done with the Red Wings. I mean, yeah, he's not. I mean, I don't think he'll stop at one. I mean, and
yeah,
you know, they have a lot of guys that are tied up anyway. That, you know, it wouldn't make sense to dump them right now anyway. In Prince Fielder, even if they wanted to trade him, and you know, obviously he's having a down year, but. He's still a good player, but his contract is just massive. So, yeah, they're not going away. They will have a competitive. I don't know if they'll be as good if, you know, once these guys get a little older and maybe they make a couple mistakes finally in player moves. But they will still be the team that the Indians have to beat.
Certainly the next
2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I don't think he'd blow it up. I keep hoping I'll ask someone and someone will try to convince me that he would blow it up, but no one seems to think so.
Well, but the good thing is you have the two wild cards, and once you get into the playoffs, I mean, you can look at recent examples. They're all over the place. Even if you get in as the wild card and you win the game, it's a short series. And I don't care if you're you know, who's pitching or who the players are, anything can happen. And that's why baseball is so, it's so different than kind of some other sports, like, you know, the NBA, you're playing the same team seven times. In baseball, you're playing a different team. Even though it's the same team, you're playing a different pitcher, probably a different lineup every night. And it's a very short series.
Even if you do have a one game or a short series, I think in the NBA, the better team, you know, if we're talking about two teams that aren't just evenly matched, you know, in a 1-8, 2-7 type series, the better team wins wins the game 80% of the time. And in baseball, the better team only wins, 65% of the time, something like that. So
absolutely, it's two different types of competitions. You have the 162 game competition, which pits your depth against other teams' depth. I mean, obviously, the Yankees are, you know, assuming a healthy Yankees team, their payroll is going to overcome, you know, a kind of a smaller market team over 162 games because they just can buy more talent, overall talent. But during a seven-game series, it doesn't matter. So that's why just, you know, if the Tigers keep winning division titles, the Indians can just make the wild card.
Right. Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. It's the wild card. They need to beat the Tigers for the wild card, though, not for the division. Let that go. Well, Ryan, thanks for joining me. Hope you enjoy your Labor Day weekend. I hope it brings a victory or three, or negotiate to two.
I hope for two. Let's be realistic.
Yeah, I'm not hoping for two. You're right. Let's hope for two. And yeah, we'll talk again soon.
Okay.
Okay, that was Ryan Richards, and this has been episode 10 of Let's Talk Tribe. Again, the big series in Detroit this weekend. We've got Zach McAllister going tomorrow against Rick Porcello for Detroit. Scott Kazmir going Saturday against Anibal Sanchez. And then Danny Salazar hoping to rebound against Justin Verlander, who's been, by Verlander's standards, really struggling lately. And then they come back home to Cleveland for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday games against the Orioles, who they're fighting with for, I guess, third place in the two-spot wildcard race. And the schedule gets a lot easier after that. But like Ryan and I were talking about earlier, if they fall much further back, it's not going to matter how easy the schedule is the rest of the way. So hopefully the bats wake up and the pitchers keep doing what they've been doing. And hopefully we talk in a week from now and we're looking at a team that's only two or three out of a playoff spot. We'll see. Talk to you next week.
When you go on a long drive, the last thing you want is a problem that leads to an unexpected... delay to your journey. So do a few simple vehicle checks before setting off, including tires, oil, water, and fuel. Highways England.